Hi everyone, my name's Nick Wood, Head of Investment Fund Research at Quilter Cheviot, and welcome to the latest edition of the Fund Buy, the podcast for all things related to the world of fund research. Today it's my great pleasure to welcome one of the world's most well-known growth investors, Cathy Wood of ARK Invest. So Cathy, really lovely to have you on the Fund Buy. I was lucky enough to meet you and your team in Florida a couple of weeks ago for what was a really fascinating meeting. It was a really great pleasure to spend some time with you. And so today, I thought we would sort of cover off some of the things we talked about then, cover off some of the some of your thoughts, which I know are pretty differentiated. We'll probably use that word a few times and maybe controversial to some. But before we do that, it's always really interesting just to hear how investors get into our world. So would you mind just giving a little bit of background on where your career started, maybe some of the career highlights before you set up ARK?
Sure, Nick, and thank you. You're actually coming to Florida made you the first person on our roadshow throughout UK and Europe. So we were thrilled about that, and thank you very much for hosting me and ARK on your podcast. So how did I get into my career? Well, I didn't know much about the investment business when I was at the University of Southern California, but I ran into a professor literally over dinner and learned that he was in the business school, focused on economics, trying to set up the supply side school of economics at USC, University of Southern California. And I started taking his classes, and I thought, wow, you know, this is really studying the way the world works. And he introduced me to Capital Group because he knew Capital was such a good research house and very long term in focus, trying to find out how the world was going to work. I'll just give you a quick one there. I was in college, so 1977, my first project with a team at Capital in 1977 was Hong Kong 1997, so 20 years later. Now remember, this is before computers, before cell phones, before spreadsheets, and we were forced to think about the future, not the way the world was working, but the way it will work. And so that's the DNA I started with, and then moved on to Jennison Associates in New York. Jennison was looking for a person with an economics background and a finance background, young enough not to impose his or her point of view, macro point of view, on the investment process, just help clients get through a very difficult environment, which was double-digit inflation and interest rates and productivity that was falling apart. US was the laughing stock of the world. So they gave me that opportunity. I was there for 18 years. And they gave me the opportunity to move into equity research and portfolio management. So I really grew up at Jennison. And my mentor, one of my mentors there, is a very well-known tech investor. He knew Mr. Hewlett and Mr. Packard and Gordon Moore. He was there at the dawn of the electronic age. And he gave me my big break. And I'll just tell you one little story on that. He was not going to ask any other analyst at the firm to give up any stocks. He said, you have to find your own universe, something that no one else is covering. And of course, what that encouraged, and I think he was doing this on purpose, was to look for stocks that weren't in anyone's space directly, like database publishing. The tech analyst didn't want it because it was a publishing company. The publishing analyst didn't want it because it was a database company. And so I said, I'll take that. And of course, Reuters and Telerate were the first. And Reuters was the first dual listed stock, London and New York. So and then After 18 years there, I went off with another one of the portfolio managers to run a much smaller but global shop. It was called Tupelo Capital, and it was a hedge fund at the perfect time, 98, 99, 2000, 2001. And so great timing there. And then after some really good success there, but a change in strategy, I decided to move toward to AllianceBernstein, which was looking for an individual to help them think a little differently. And Bruce Calvert, the CEO at the time, I had known for many, many years, he brought me in. So that's that. I was there for 12 years. And the final thing I'll say is one of the reasons I started ARC was to fulfill an unmet need. And that is the reason I think anyone should start a company. And what was that unmet need? It was a truly differentiated exposure to innovation. And, and that's ever more true today with the Mag 6 movement. Given our active share, and I probably have blown through a lot of your questions, Nick, with this introductory answer, but the unmet need was, wait a minute, post tech and telecom bust, and even more so after 08-09, there was a move towards passive investing or very benchmark sensitive investing, which is not that different from passive in a way. And we saw, five major platforms evolving at the same time that were going to transform the world completely, and thought, okay, this is the moment to start a company that adds to portfolios or gives asset allocators an opportunity to allocate to a truly differentiated source of innovation. So there you go, Nick. I don't know how many other questions I answered in that introductory.
You did a very good job there. I'm proud to say we shared the our very first house together, Capital Group. Yes. I think that's where our careers diverged from there. Yes. But nonetheless, it's a good place to be. As you said, you mentioned the sort of five platforms. You've been in the I think it's fair to say ARC is less well known in Europe, but you've recently launched three ARC ETF for European clients. Maybe I just wondered maybe if you've talked about it being differentiated, but would you mind giving a flavor of the biases and the key themes in each of those, and what clients might expect, what investors might expect that's differentiated from others?
Sure. Differentiated is key. And it's not being differentiated for differentiated sake. It is because we see so many opportunities out there involved in the five major platforms around which we have centered our research. So robotics, energy storage, artificial intelligence, blockchain technology, and multiomic sequencing in the life science space. So the three funds that we launched through the UK and Europe in the last month are the ARC Innovation UCITS ETF. That's our flagship. It has exposure to each of those five platforms. Then the ARC AI and Robotics UCITS ETF. Now, that is purpose-built for the UK and Europe. I wish actually we had named, had such a fund in the US, but we have overlapping funds and couldn't be as direct and specifically allocated towards AI and robotics. And we think that convergence is going to be massive, especially when it comes to transportation and space exploration. And then the third one is the ARC Genomics Revolution UCITS ETF. We feel that this is the area, that multiomic sequencing platform, is the area that has been most neglected by this market and is the most inefficiently priced because it is earliest in its evolution. And because it is so early, the cash flow characteristics and the balance sheets look nothing like the Mag 6. In fact, quite the opposite, of course. These are earlier stage, and so many are not profitable yet. Many are, but many are not. But they do have good cash positions. And I think what happened during COVID was almost a blessing in disguise for these companies, because they had a near-death experience with much less cash on their balance sheets pre-COVID. And COVID and its aftermath, which created a boom in these stocks, gave them the opportunity to shore up their balance sheets. So from a balance sheet point of view, they are in good shape. I think on average, market cap weighted 4 years of cash runway, thanks to the cash raise during the boom right after COVID. So I think that gives you a sense of the three. I'll also say that if you look at each of these funds relative to benchmarks that they might be measured by, the ARK Innovation UCITS ETF is typically 95% to 98% active. So that basically is telling you we own very little in the Mag 6. And there are reasons. We think that what's going on with AI and all of these platforms could in some ways be disruptive to those, the Mag 6, in ways many people do not appreciate, and certainly do not appreciate given the valuations they've placed on them. The ARK AI and Robotics Fund, if you compare that to the NASDAQ 100, I think the active share there would be 75%. So still fairly active. And then the ARK Genomics Revolution UCITS ETF, if you were to compare that to the S&P Healthcare Index, the active share is 93%. So truly differentiated exposure in the life sciences and healthcare space.
Yeah, no, great. Great, thanks. And you mentioned some indices there, and we all love comparing fund selects at least love comparing funds to indices, but it probably wouldn't be very appropriate for these. How should I measure your funds? How should we think about what should investors expect to achieve sort of long term? Is it compare you to an index or an absolute?
Yeah, so we do not compare ourselves to indexes. I provided those because we know how the world works out there. Yeah. And that's how people do think, asset allocators and such. Our objective is to deliver a minimum 15% compound annual rate of return over 5 years. And you might ask us, okay, what have the last 5 years been like? And it has been the most volatile period of my career. We went through a near bust pre-COVID, right as we're entering COVID, then a boom, the likes of which I've never seen before, and a bust, the likes I've never seen before, because of the 24-fold increase in interest rates in little more than a year's time. All long duration assets, long-term bonds especially, had their worst years ever. And that certainly was the case. So we feel like we've paid our dues, but we have not in that the interest rate move, we truly believe is over, and that we're entering a period not of inflation. But I think that because of innovation, disruptive innovation, and the creative destruction that's going to cause, think internal combustion engine and gas powered vehicles, that we're going to go through a deflationary phase, which is quite the opposite of what the market is thinking right now. And if that's right, then interest rates are going to have to come down, and we will make up for the absence of that 15% compound annual rate of return over the last 5 years, now that we've entered the other side of that very difficult time.
Yeah, great. Well, as you touched upon inflation, and I guess that's that's sort of definitely a fairly contrarian view. The one area that I've wondered is energy transition is an area which is sort of generally seen as an inflationary factor. Maybe some of the others are deflationary. Do you see that maybe as do you have a differentiated view there, or is it, would you do you think even in energy transition we might be deflationary long term?
Yes, actually it's a very good example. If you look at energy storage, if you look at drivetrains, battery pack systems in electric vehicles, this will help your listeners understand how we think about innovation. So our work on battery technology, I think, probably is the most extensive or among the most extensive areas of research in the industry. And so in studying the battery technology that Tesla, we're known for our position in Tesla. Tesla really innovated by assuming that it could ride down the consumer electronics battery cost curve, whereas most other automakers thought they'd have to design an entirely new battery, different form factor for the automobile. Tesla was thinking differently, and so we've been able to model out how quickly the battery cost, the drivetrain costs, which is the biggest part of the electric vehicle, how quickly that was falling. And for every cumulative doubling in the number of electric vehicles sold, costs associated with these battery pack systems drop at a 28% rate. Now, we are hitting levels. I think the total sale, electric vehicle sales as a percent of all auto sales is a little bit north or around 10%. So we have some cumulative doublings to go. And technology, and this is a technologically enabled revolution, technology is inherently deflationary. So it's very interesting, Nick, that there is this this perception that it's inflationary. I think maybe what people are thinking is we're pulling back on fossil fuel production and that is boosting oil prices. But at the same time, if we're switching from the internal combustion engine to electric vehicles, the demand for fossil fuels, we think, is topping out secularly and will fall. And commodity prices are determined at the margin if demand is falling relative to supply. And we think that will be the case for fossil fuels generally, then that will be a source actually of deflation.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Oh, well, that's interesting view, and let's see how we go in the next few years.
Yes.
One of the things I really picked up on, having met hundreds of managers over the years, you can end up with very similar processes and presentation packs. And I was sort of struck by the way you go about investing and your process, which was a little outside the norm. And you've obviously worked in some of the large asset managers, and so have seen that from the inside. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about what you're doing differently to your past, and maybe, you know, why that works. What edge are you getting from the way you're sort of tackling your research?
Yes, it was very interesting, Nick, to go on the roadshow throughout the UK and Europe and learn some misperceptions about ARC. I mean, our brand is global. And in fact, what has been very gratifying over the years is to learn that 20 to 25% of our quote unquote subscriber base, we give our research away, is from Europe. But we saw a few misperceptions. One is that we're a small cap manager. We are not. In fact, if you look at our breakdown by market cap, more than 60%, roughly a little more than 60% is large and mega cap, but only 10 percentage points is mega cap. So that's just, and 10% is small cap, and then the rest mid cap. So that was one. And then the second was that we do all this great top-down research centered on Wright's Law, which is the arithmetic that gets us to the percentage cost declines for every cumulative doubling. So I think many people understand that about us, but they don't understand how rigorous our bottom-up stock selection is. And we have, so from a modeling point of view, we're as bottom-up stock research-driven as any other team out there. That's my heritage. I came out of Capital, Alliance, Jennison, and they're all bottom up in their orientation, with Capital having a top down starting point. I would say we have a starting point from the top down, informed importantly by Wright's Law. But we have a parallel process where top down and bottom up take place at the same time. And just to give you a sense of that, as we were starting our work on autonomous vehicles in 2014, when the firm was founded, we tasked Tasha Keeney to go out there and say, okay, Elon Musk is talking about autonomous vehicles in his master plan. What's an autonomous vehicle? What goes into it? How should we think about how realistic this is going to be? She came into one of our brainstorms after consulting with academia, consulting with social media. There are a lot of innovators in social media, LinkedIn, and surprisingly, X. That seems to be populating increasingly with innovators. She came back and she said, now this is 2014. It appears that the brains of an autonomous vehicle are going to be GPUs. And we, you know, I was stunned because NVIDIA at the time was being trounced as nothing but a PC gaming chip company, and PCs were dropping at a double-digit rate. And so we started, we had an NVIDIA model because of gaming, but then Tasha was able to build in a new division at NVIDIA. And so began and enhanced our bottom-up work as we were learning more about top-down autonomous. There are six metrics. Once we have our top-down modeling and bottom-up modeling, we are evaluating six metrics constantly. Four of them have scores from 1 to 10. And then the other two I will explain after explaining the four. The first is management, people, culture, visionary leaders surrounded by the right business people. A visionary leader who's either invented the technology or has been at its inception in some way and understands how it is going to scale, what must happen, and is willing to invest aggressively now in order to capitalize on some massive opportunities in the short term. So they're willing to stand up to in the long term. They're willing to stand up to short-term oriented shareholders and say, no, we're going to sacrifice short-term profitability in order to invest and scale. In the case of Tesla, it's in the electric vehicle and now the autonomous vehicle market. Execution, what does that mean to us? Sure, we're modeling and we have expectations. Ours are annual expectations, though we look quarter by quarter. We're looking 5 years out. That's our investment time horizon, modeling companies year by year. And execution means to us, are companies spending enough, investing enough now on R&D, and elsewhere to capitalize on this opportunity? And are they spending it in the right places? So the easy example there was we had Toyota and Tesla in for electric vehicles early on. Toyota, it was Toyota's market to lose. It was halfway there with hybrid, right? And once it pivoted at the direction of its government, who did not believe that the grid, Japanese grid, could support transportation, it pivoted to hydrogen fuel cell. And we said, nope, that is not going to work. And we sold the stock because we thought that R&D would be wasted. And then we go to moats and barriers to entry. This often is patents, true, but more and more with AI now, it's becoming speed to market. How quickly are these companies harnessing AI and other technologies to get to their goals first? Because in the world of AI, there is a winner-take-most set of opportunities out there. Certainly in the autonomous taxi network world, that is true. The company to get people from point A to point B, the quickest and the safest is probably going to be the biggest winner in the space. Then we go to product and market leadership. Often that's market share. It's also consumer sentiment, which we can monitor on the social networks. So those are the four scored 1 to 10, and anyone dropping below a 7 into 6 territory means we're probably cutting back. If there are two of those moving into below 7 territory, we're probably exiting the stock. Then we get to, and this is addressing another misperception that we found in the UK and Europe, valuation. Many seem to think that, you know, we didn't really care much about valuation as long as a company was positioned correctly. That is not at all true. In fact, we actually are looking at valuation as a massive headwind to price appreciation going forward. So it is true that because our companies are foregoing short-term profitability, that our portfolios sell at a premium to the market. And we assume that that premium effectively disappears over the next 5 years, whatever the premium is. That is a headwind, and our analysts have to believe that revenue growth and margin expansion is going to overwhelm that valuation compression. To deliver that 15% minimum hurdle rate of return. So we don't use a benchmark as our guide, that 15%. And when I say minimum these days, I do mean minimum. So just to give you a sense of where we are in valuation right now, if we use the S&P 500 and we adjust the valuations for stock-based compensation, which is critical in innovation for both the S&P and our flagship. So the S&P today is about somewhere in the 17 to 18 times earnings on that basis. And our flagship strategy is at about 27 times. And believe it or not, that's quite a narrow gap relative to history. But nonetheless, that 27, we assume, is going to compress to 18 over the next 5 years. And then the final metric of these six is thesis risk. What is a risk that could throw us off? Throwing us off is going to be government regulation. And so if we fear government regulation, thesis risk will be high. And that certainly was the case for autonomous when it comes to Tesla, until recently, when the National Highway and Transportation Safety Association here has been using data generated by Tesla to determine that its cars are the safest on the road. And why is it interested? It's because accidents have soared in the United States, up nearly 50% after decades of going down. So I know I've taken you through a whirlwind there, Nick, but that gives you a sense of our process. It's rigorous, it's top-down, bottom-up, in parallel with this overlay of a scoring system.
Yeah, no, that's great. And you touched upon something there that I definitely sort of stands out. I mean, plenty of long-term growth managers, and I know I've heard you call yourself a value manager before, maybe we'll touch upon that, but many sort of long-term growth we tend to be fairly static in their positioning. And we've definitely seen you being a bit more active. Is there anything you'd share around, you know, the areas you're particularly interested in at the moment, adding to look more attractive, or conversely, anything that looks a bit more sort of fully priced? Is there anything you particularly highlight on either of those?
Yes, you know, it's interesting. When we go through a bear market, we concentrate towards our highest conviction names. Mm. But when we are in a bull market, and in 2020 into 21, we were in a bull market the likes of which I had never seen for our strategy before. And during that period, we diversify into what we call cash-like innovation names. And those would and did include the Mag 6. Now, what we've seen as we went through the bear market for our strategy, especially in 2022, we saw Mag 6, they were hit, but they weren't hit anything like ours. And so we were diversifying. I mean, we were concentrating away from them and into more leading edge innovation names. So what we've seen over the last few years is this concentration into the Mag 6, I think has reached such an extreme, and their valuations with it, that, and I'll go back to what you said, Nick, as a value manager, if you give us 5 years, if you give us that investment time horizon, we're a deep value manager. If we're right about these five major platforms and how they're going to evolve, really catalyzed by AI itself during the next 5 years. We are in terms of, we are not static. Disruptive innovation is inherently controversial. And so we are trading around the controversies associated with our names. And, you know, Tesla for years was in a massive trading range, and we are in another one. It's a higher level, but it generated a lot of controversy around electric vehicles. Are we ready to begin with? And now the controversy is around autonomous taxi platforms. So these trading ranges are pretty well established. And so we will, when Tesla gets to the top of a trading range, we will be taking profits because we know there will be another controversy that will drive it down. And when it goes down, we'll be there and we'll have the psychological wherewithal to buy back in because we did take profits. So we do that quite liberally across our portfolio. So and it has from alpha generation point of view, over most years, it has added to our performance, this trading around the controversies associated with our names.
Yeah, no, great. It sounds like you are, you know, you are pretty active around the trading. I guess what I've always been slightly skeptical about thematic strategies, if I can call that. And I would say that not because of how you manage your portfolio, but actually as perhaps if I think of myself as the an average investor that kind of waits until there's a bit of hype and finally when all, you know, the let's just say the newspapers are talking about whichever particular stock or area is going up, maybe then I decide I'm going to buy into that particular theme. And actually when performance is quite poor, I'm either selling or I'm definitely not buying. So I might as an individual investor do exactly the wrong thing here. What would you say to individual investors? Should they think about if they were to buy into one of your products that they should Should they be thinking quite actively about buying at the bottom, selling at the top, or just take a very long-term mindset about it and sort of look through? There's two parts to this, as well as your ability. It's my ability as well, to some extent.
Absolutely. And it's a great question, and it's a really important one, Nick. So we have done a study where if you look at our five-year rolling returns, and remember that is our time horizon, and you allocated 5% to our strategy, no matter when you did this, let's just say it then had amazing performance and we ended up at 7.5% of your allocation. Our recommendation would be to rebalance to the 5%. On the other hand, if you start at 5% and, you know, unfortunately it sinks to a 2.5% position, we would have you rebalance there as well. And if you look at the history of ARK, and actually it was James Thomas at ARK Europe who made this observation. He said, and he's the head of sales, so he would be very sensitive to this subject. He'd say, wow, if we had done that, we would have had 3 sell points over the life of ARK and 1 buy point. And the rolling returns, I think you would have dipped below, the base portfolio without our strategy in it, you know, only a few times over those many 5-year rolling periods by month. So I think that's the right way to do it. And then if, you know, we've done a paper where if you, you know, we showed the allocation 5%, 10%, 15% of your equity allocation to truly disruptive innovation. And we show over time how risk adjusted returns increase over time with each additional allocation. But walk before you run, because we do behave volatilely. There's no question about it. And I just gave you the reason why. Disruptive innovation is inherently controversial. How many times as we were talking about Tesla out in the media, did journalists ask us, wait a minute, this company is barely selling any cars. And the large OEMs, GM, Ford, Volkswagen, Mercedes, their R&D budgets run circles around Tesla sales. There's just no, and of course, they were being informed by those companies. Those companies effectively were saying, hey, we are auto companies. That's our market. We have the installed base. We are going to win. We have the R&D to do this. What they don't have is the right DNA. They had to move from hardware engineering to software engineering. They had to move from engines to the internal combustion engine to battery technology. They now have to move from human-driven to autonomous AI, completely different DNA. So there's a lot of controversy, and it's generated by the companies that our companies are disrupting. So that's why we have so many opportunities to trade around, and why we are so volatile. And I would also say we've been through this period with interest rates. Again, never seen this kind of increase before. Even under Chairman Volcker, it was a twofold increase. People had gotten used to higher interest rates, higher inflation. This was a shock, a massive shock to the system. And we're seeing it reverberate around the world with devaluations, even to this day. That's a period of volatility for our strategy. But we do think that we've paid our dues and that the resolution to this inflation interest rate argument will be to the low side of expectations.
Great. I'm sure there must be you speak to the press quite a lot. I'm sure there must be the odd day where you sometimes wish you just owned the Mag 7 and the less controversial names, just for for an easier life, but I'm sure it wouldn't. I'm sure you wouldn't believe that was good for returns. But
no. When everybody's running in one direction, I learned this very early in my career. When everyone is running in one direction, and early in my career, when I was doing economics exclusively, that one direction in the late 70s, early 80s is, inflation is embedded at a double digit rate, get used to it. And we took the different position, and that led to 20 years of outsized returns on average. And the same with the Mag 6. Everyone's moving in the same direction, thinking, you know, these behemoths are surely the biggest beneficiaries of all of these technology revolutions. We would disagree. But if everyone is thinking that, and we're moving in the opposite direction, and everyone is thinking we're wrong, well, if we're even a little bit right, then the reward should be substantial.
Great. That's brilliant, Kathy. I may, if I can, I'm just going to close on two short questions. We all would like to be better investors tomorrow than we are today, and so maybe just a couple of quick questions. Is there any investment advice that sort of you've been given in your career that you really have sort of taken with you throughout, or you'd suggest some of the listeners should sort of take heed of that you've learned?
Well, I think humility is really important in our business, and I can tell you at our peak in late 2021, I was out there telling my team. I said, "Look, this, the world and the market think we can do no wrong. I know that is not right. I want you to know there's going to be another side to this. Did I dream it was going to be as vicious as it was? No. But I think it was really important to, basically say, okay, this is in late 2021, this is not ARK. This is a momentum move gone wild. And I would say we're at the opposite end of that right now. And while still maintaining the humility and the conviction in our research, you must do the research. Do not follow momentum. You must do the research, and the courage of your conviction must come out of your research. That is why we have been so strong and stalwart in our portfolios and not moving into a style drift phase where we are drifting back into the Mag 6, that we are not. If anything, we have certainly at the top 10, we've concentrated even more towards our highest conviction names. And those are names that are not well understood, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I think humility and going where others are not, but understand your conviction will be tested by markets that have momentum moves that really do become irrational at times. And it's even more important that we must stick to our style and our roots and our reason for being, is that differentiated exposure to innovation.
Yeah, great. And then lastly, do you have any particular sort of, investment resource, book, podcast, website, anything that you think others should definitely take a look at and read? Maybe it's your own some of the output that ARK produces, but any particular thoughts on sort of resources that people might look at?
Sure, and we do give all of our research away. Blogs, white papers, podcasts. We have at least one podcast a week. Our chief futurist is going to start hosting them in collaboration with each of the analysts interviewing people. And, we also put out, if you want, on I think it's every Tuesday, a summary of our brainstorm from the week before. So we have a brainstorm every Friday from 10:30 to 12:30. And Nick Roos, one of our APMs, and Sam Corris, one of our research directors, the following week summarizes it. And, I have to tell you, even though I sit in that 2-hour research meeting, I listen to that 30 to 40 minute summary of it, because when you're going through the brainstorm itself, their ideas are just flying back and forth. That's what a brainstorm is. But they help to distill and poke and ask questions in a way that cements some of the ideas that we're generating out of that brainstorm. And so everyone can have access to that. It's called The Brainstorm by ARC. And then I'll just say, in terms of podcast, I do love Lex Friedman, who's very focused on technology and innovation generally. He has great guests. It's quite long form, so you really have to love technology and innovation. but he does a incredible research before he does an interview, and just really, it's a very rich interview.
Fantastic. Sounds like one for my next long run. So
there you go. Yeah.
Well, Kathy, look, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me on the Fun Buyer today. It's been really really interesting discussion. I will leave you to get back to your work, but thanks everyone for listening, and as ever, stay safe.